Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Kind of Cursed by Stephanie Fournette, narrated by M. Eldridge and Gary Tiedemann. Prologue. Millie. Fertility. It's something of a curse in my family. I'm sure a lot of people who've had to deal with the curse of infertility probably wouldn't appreciate me saying that. And to them, or anyone else, I mean no offense. But anyone who's heard about my family, that is, the maternal line of my family, would agree that curse isn't too strong of a word. I come from a long line of remarkably fecund women, and I'm not about to offend a whole other subset of people by claiming that any of my maternal ancestors were the result of an immaculate conception. But something supernatural. And I'm just stating for the record here that my term for it is curse. Has to be at work. Either the women in my family have been graced with wombs that are teeming with eggs like a caviar sturgeon, ripe and ready for that magical moment 365 days a year. Or we have all had the uncanny ability to attract the most virile of virile men who spread sperm, indestructible, everlasting, and navigationally superior sperm, like mean girls spread gossip. I could probably go back 10 generations to make my point, but let's just take 3, starting with great-grandma Mildred, whom I happen to be named after. But that's a different family curse. Great-grandma Mildred had 2 sets of twins, the first boys, the second girls, separated by 3 babies, all born in the span of 7 years. That's 7 kids in 7 years. The poor woman wasn't even 25 by the time she had the last one. I'm not sure what put a stop to it, but either my great-granny's uterus fell out, or she started sleeping with a hot poker to keep great-grandpa Hubert on his side of the bed. Granny Matilda, whom my little sister Maddie is lucky enough to be named after, didn't have it much better, even with the invention of the pill in the 1920s. She used to say Grandpa Ernie just had to look at her across the dining table, and she'd be with child. That must have been some look. 2 boys, then a set of twins, also boys, then my mom, and finally my Aunt Prue. At least Granny Matilda spaced hers out a little better than Great-Grandma Mildred. But that just meant she was changing diapers for more than a decade. Mom turned up pregnant with me when she and Dad were sophomores in college. They'd been dating for all of 3 months. Mom knew about the curse, of course. It was part of family lore. She had even warned Dad. They figured the pill and condoms would be enough. They figured wrong. Medical advances are no match for the supernatural. And a week after seeing the plus sign on that pregnancy test, they tied the knot at the parish courthouse. I've always thought that decision said everything about what they felt for each other. I mean, they'd barely known each other for a whole season. I can't imagine that kind of certainty, but they always had it. And back then, they didn't have much else. No money, that's for sure. I remember us eating toasted O's for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for a whole week while Dad was in med school and Mom was between waitressing jobs. Mom once told me that during those years, they'd relied on 3 different kinds of birth control. They weren't about to take any chances with the 3 of us in a tiny apartment. But as I've said, I don't think birth control actually matters. Maybe the curse took a break. Or maybe my parents were just too tired to do it back then. But midway through Dad's surgical residency, the curse returned with a vengeance. And we got the twins, Harry and Maddie. By then, I was 10, and Mom had gone back to school and finished in interior design. Money was still tight, but I remember Mom and Dad being insanely happy when they found out our family was growing. So I was happy, too. Mom told me they'd never wanted me to be an only child. The twins just showed up a little earlier than they'd planned, since Dad was still just a medical resident and Mom was a student. and 3 was supposed to be the magic number. I got this piece of information when I started dating in high school. The twins were about 6 at the time, and one Saturday, Dad took them to the skating rink, and Mom and I went shopping. That's when she told me about the curse. Of course, she didn't use that word. That's mine. If I remember correctly, she called it an uncanny potential for procreation. At the time, I thought she was just trying to scare me away from sex. And I might still think that if it weren't for Emmett. Emmett is my 8-year-old brother, who was born 6 years after the twins and 5 years after my dad's vasectomy. I don't care what anyone calls it. That's a curse. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love my brother and the twins. Harry, Maddie, and Emmett are the greatest. I'd literally do anything for them. And while all of my parents' pregnancies were unplanned, I never thought for a moment they were unwanted. It's the powerlessness I take issue with. The life-altering powerlessness. My parents never seemed to mind this haplessness, this state of being at the mercy of the fates. But they had each other, and they were so in love. I don't think it really mattered what happened to them as long as they were together. And they were, right up to the end. Maybe that would make any curse bearable. I wouldn't know. For me, the curse has just struck the once, and it was the most unbearable time of my life. Chapter 1. Millie. Emmett is coughing. My alarm hasn't even gone off yet, but he's awake, coughing. And I can tell just by the sound that he's faking. School refusal, the guidance counselor called it. My 8-year-old brother doesn't want to go to school, so he pretends to be sick as often as he can. I can't say I blame him. He knows I'm off on Mondays. Someone would be free to watch him, so why not make it a 3-day weekend? We go through this almost every week. Some days he rasps through a sore throat or moans with stomach cramps. It's the coughing that woke me today. Or it woke Clarence, and Clarence woke me. I'm not sure which, but I can feel the puffs of his canine breath through the blanket over my knee. His ears are perked toward the door, listening to Emmett's cough. But being the good boy he is, he's waiting for me to make the first move. I glance at the glowing red numbers on my alarm. 5:26. I have 4 minutes until the thing goes off. 5 minutes until I have to wake up Maddie. 10 minutes until I have to wake up Harry. And 15 minutes until it's Emmett's turn. Except he's awake already. Plotting. With a sigh, I roll onto my back and stare at the shadowed ceiling, asking the question I've asked every day for the last 5 months. What would Mom do? She'd be patient, cheerful, and absolutely uncompromising. And Emmett's ass would get to school. I close my eyes, marshaling my willpower and letting myself catch a few more seconds of peace and solitude. And then the beeping starts. I deliver the alarm clock a vengeful slap. Clarence lifts his head with a jangle of tags. Yep, buddy, I sigh again. It's time. When I toss back the covers, my roommate slash bedmate slash soulmate and 4-year-old Great Pyrenees rises with lumbering ease, stretches his massive limbs, and jumps off the bed. Let's go wake Maddie, I say, wrapping up in my robe before opening the bedroom door. It's technically not my bedroom door. It's the guest room. Or rather, the guest suite. My room, the room I lived in until I left for college, is now Maddie's. Before I moved out, she roomed with Harry. Like most twins, they were inseparable when they were little. When I went to Tulane, they were only 8 years old. And I don't think either one of them had ever thought about rooming by themselves until Mom offered Maddie my room, I guess Mom figured the two of them bunking together any longer would be weird. And the offer of my room, with its private bathroom and its balcony overlooking St. Mary's Street, might be just the thing to get her to take the plunge. Mom was right, and Maddie moved, all the way down the hall. I pass both boys' rooms because Maddie needs to be woken first. Not because she's a girl, not because she primps or changes outfits 5 times before she leaves, but because she stresses when she's rushed, and I don't need her to be stressed. Her door is closed almost all the way, but not latched, so when Clarence pokes it with his nose, it opens soundlessly, and he slips in. I stand in the doorway and squint to see him booper in the face. The sight of it makes me smile. Maddie, who sleeps on her side, makes a muffled sound, reaches out a hand, and scrubs Clarence behind one ear. "I'm up, Millie," she says softly, and I can tell she's smiling too. Because if your mom's not there to wake you up in the morning, a 110-pound Great Pyrenees is the next best thing. And yeah, I learned that the hard way, but at least I learned it. The wake-up routine is almost the same for Harry, except Harry is a stomach sleeper. This means he somehow roots his way under the pillows during the night. He may be 14 years old, but when he's asleep, he still looks like one of Peter Pan's lost boys. Bony, all elbows and knees, hair sticking up like a turkey tail from his pillow diving. So most mornings, Clarence has to do a little excavating. He snuffles and snorts and pokes his big head under the pillow pile. And since Harry isn't as easy to wake as Maddie, there's usually licking involved. Ugh! Pillows scatter. I grin. Yep, he's awake. Morning, Harry.
Blick! His tongue got in my mouth!
He whispers shouts across the room. He's not really mad, or even grossed out. He's trying to make me laugh, so I do. Clarence, mind your manners, I say, chuckling. So, what'll it be? Waffles or eggs? After we lost Mom and Dad, I quickly learned that even if Maddie and Harry were technically old enough to make their own breakfasts, they didn't actually have the maturity to do it. They'd say they weren't hungry just to sleep later. But then the calls started coming from school about them falling asleep or sneaking snacks in class. So I make breakfast for everyone now.
Eggs. 3 scrambled, please. Got a game today.
My eyes bug, and I'm glad it's too dark for him to see. Right, I say as if I totally remembered his soccer game, and I so totally forgot. I cross my fingers for good luck. A home game.
Please, God, let it be a home game.
Away games are a logistical gamble, and I'd hate for him not to have anyone in the stands cheering him on.
Yeah, like I told you last week.
Harry sits up and scrubs his head, and in the dim light of the hallway, I can see he's frowning at me.
Did you forget?
No, I didn't forget. Just making sure. I sing-song, crawfishing out of the room. I still have a few minutes before I have to get Emmett. Just enough time to negotiate. So, I dash back to Maddie's room. The outline of light tells me she's in the bathroom, so I tiptoe through her room and press my lips to the door jamb. I can hear water running.
Maddie,
I hiss whisper. The water cuts off.
What?
She sounds irritated. And I have to admit, if one of them came to the door while I was in the bathroom, I'd be irritated too. But I only have a few minutes, and I need to be strategic about this. As Mick Jagger says, you can't always get what you want. Well, none of my siblings is going to get what they want today, but maybe they'll get what they need. Can you stay at school today for Harry's game, so I can pick up Emmett and get him there? I hear my sister's annoyed sigh, and I brace myself. Maddie likes routine, She wants to come home every day, straight after school, and start on her homework. At 5:30 on Mondays and Wednesdays, Mrs. Chen arrives for Maddie's piano lesson. But at 5:30 every day, even when she doesn't have lessons, Maddie is still at the piano, practicing for an hour. Except Saturdays and Sundays, when she practices for 2 hours. Harry's game starts at 3. Emmett loves Harry's games. The chance to go to one, which means me picking him up from school instead of having him ride the bus home, might be just the bargaining chip I need to get him up and out without a fuss today. But instead of picking her up like I normally do, Maddie will have to stay after school until the game ends, which won't be until around 4:30. Messing with her routine is going to carry a price. "Fine," she drones. "But can we have Chick-fil-A for dinner?" And here it is. Harry likes Cane's better. Emmett says Cane's is better, but I really don't think he cares. He just wants to be like his big brother. I don't like either, but at least Cane's is closer and local. To get Maddie's precious grilled cool wrap and waffle fries, I'll have to drop the kids off at home first so Maddie will be there in time for her lesson, get back in the car, and drive all the way to the Ambassador Caffrey location. Not to mention having to listen to the boys gripe about why we aren't getting Cane's. Like I said, no one's going to get exactly what they want here. Emmett's not going to get to skip school. Maddie's not going to get to come home right after school. And Harry's not going to get the dinner he wants when he wants it. He'll have to wait another hour, after a full day of school and a soccer game, to get the dinner he doesn't want. But they'll get what they need. And bottom line, that's what I need. Forget what you want. I know I have. Getting what you want is overrated. Chapter 2. Millie.
"Can I get a Coke and a popcorn?" Emmett asks, slamming the car door before catching up with me. The soccer game is just minutes from starting, and I want to be in the stands when it does.
"I'll share it with you."
I glance down at my red-haired little brother and his manufactured look of wide-eyed innocence. I'm not falling for that again. The last time I did, Emmett drank all but the last two swallows of Coke and zipped around the soccer field like a bumblebee on Vyvanse. "How about we get a popcorn and 2 waters? His whole body sags.
"I hate water."
"You're made of mostly water." Emmett screws up his face and looks at me through his long bangs. The kid needs a haircut. When was the last time he had one? How often should he get one? It's shit like this I haven't figured out yet.
"I'm mostly made of water?"
His look of bewilderment is priceless, and I wish he'd hold it long enough for me to snap a picture with my phone. But he doesn't. And who would I show it to anyway? "All humans are," I say, tucking myself pitying thoughts away. We make our way to the concession stand.
"What about dogs?"
he asks a moment later. "Dogs, too." He giggles.
"Even Clarence?"
I grin. "Even Clarence.
I figured he was mostly gas."
I try not to laugh because laughing at Emmett's fart jokes only encourages him. But he sees me struggling and beams with pride.
"Get it?"
he asks, digging in. I roll my eyes. "Yeah, I get it. You're too much." We move to the front of the line and get our snacks. I lead him away from the concession crowd and scan the bleachers. I wonder where Maddie is.
"Probably hiding with her homework somewhere,"
Emmett mutters. "You say that like it's a bad thing." I find us a spot in the stands with enough room for Maddie to join us and dig out my phone.
"It is a bad thing,"
Emmett says with conviction. He takes the popcorn from me and plants the bag on his lap.
"A boring thing."
If he's ready to talk about school, I'm ready to listen. I just have to find Maddie first. I tap out a message on my phone. Me. At the soccer field. Where are you? I grab a handful of popcorn and scan the field for Harry, making my question come out as casual as possible. Is your homework boring? Emmett snorts like I've just said something ludicrous. No, it's dumb. My little brother gets his homework done, at least on the days he goes to school, because I make him. He sits at the kitchen table while I fix dinner, and it never takes him long. But if I didn't drag it out of his book sack, he'd ignore it and probably fail. He may fail anyway, the counselor has warned me, if he misses too many more days. But if school is boring and dumb, maybe he needs more of a challenge. Maybe I should ask the counselor about having him tested for gifted. Maddie and Harry are in the gifted program here at Lafayette High. I did it too when I was in school. Maybe Emmett is ready for that now. Do you think school is boring? I ask, still not looking at him. But I've said the S word. Classic misstep. Even out of the corner of my eye, I watch his shoulder slump.
I don't want to talk about school.
Well, we probably should. But even as I say it, the Lions kick off the game, and I know I've lost him.
Let's watch, he says. That's why we're here, isn't it?
I sigh just as my phone chirps. I glance down. Maddie, in the library. Can I stay here and finish? Be done in about 20. I stifle another sigh. She'll miss most of the first half. I know I shouldn't complain. She's in the library finishing her homework. But going to Harry's games has always been a family thing. Just like Maddie's recitals and Emmett's t-ball. Mom and Dad thought it was important for us to do stuff like that together. Living in a different city while I was in school meant I didn't share this the same way. But if I was home visiting, I was expected to go too. We all were. Maybe it's silly to try to keep this part of their lives the same when so much else has changed. Still, when I text her, it feels like conceding failure. Me. Okay, but be here by 3:30. She replies with a thumbs up. I put my phone away, ignoring the too familiar sinking feeling in my gut, and lift my gaze to the field. Harry is the starting goalie, and even from this distance, I can see the coiled readiness of his limbs, the way his eyes track the ball as it zigzags across the grass. The season just started. The Lions are 3 home games in. Last season, back when everything was the way it was supposed to be, Harry and Maddie were still in middle school. He played, of course, but I was still in vet school, and I could only make it in town for 1 game. The same thing for the years before that. Before this year, I'd seen maybe 3 soccer games. This season, I've figured out half the flag signs, but I still don't understand most of the offside calls. I'm trying to understand why one of the assistant refs has his flag in the air when 4 people, arguing in rapid-fire Spanish, approach and sit on the bleachers in front of us. I can't help but notice them because, besides the arguing, out of the 4, 2 of them walk with canes, an older man and a woman who looks adorably ancient. But it's the man between them, steadying each with a supportive arm on either side, my eyes find. I swallow. Dark. Chiseled. Flawless. Oh, except for that scar that scores his left brow. It would make him look kind of scary if he didn't have those long, curling eyelashes. This is what I'm thinking when the eyes behind those dark, curling lashes flit to mine, and I suck in a breath and choke on a piece of popcorn. The rogue colonel triggers an instant coughing fit, and I wrench open my Dasani bottle, trying to silence my struggle in a flood of water. You okay? Emmett asks, frowning up at me. Eyes streaming, bottle pressed to my lips, I nod, It's touch and go for a moment, and for one terrifying instant, I'm afraid I'm about to spray Emmett and the entire Spanish-speaking family with a mouth shower. But then the beastly popcorn kernel washes away, and I can breathe again after a few racking coughs. Thankfully, most of this has happened while the family in front of me has been busy situating the two cane-bound members, still arguing in Spanish.
Dear God, for future reference, if I'm going to choke to death, please don't let it be in front of an audience, I pray, dabbing my eyes dry on the cuff of my sweater. Definitely not in front of Emmett, and no cute guys. I know I shouldn't care about that part, but I really do.
I halt my prayer as one of the strikers from the opposing team aims a powerful and arrow-straight kick right at the Lions' goal. Harry leaps, limbs splayed like a five-pointed star, and deflects it with his right hand. The home side goes wild. Emmett and I spring to our feet, screaming for all we're worth.
Harry! Yeah!
I yell.
Woohoo!
Emmett whoops.
That's my brother! Woo!
I hear chuckles from the crowd around us, and I don't miss Mr. Dark, scarred and chiseled, glancing over his shoulder, the corner of his mouth tipped up in a grin. But I quickly drag my gaze away, cheering for Harry before I sit down. I grab the water bottle and guzzle. Cheering is thirsty work, and my face is hot. And I am definitely not here to make eyes at the dark, scarred, and chiseled of the world. Not today, and not any time in the near future. That is the last thing you need right now, I tell myself, a mental image of Carter Fox darting through my mind. And that image does the trick. A frosty rush replaces the heat in my cheeks, and I draw my thin cardigan more tightly around myself. One thought, and I am prepared to live like a nun until Emmett finishes high school. That's me, Sister Mildred. I sniff a laugh at the ring of it. Sister Mildred sounds more chaste than Mary Poppins, and absolutely, positively impregnable. Impregnable. That's the critical point. So with impregnable focus, I turn my attention firmly back to the soccer game and cheer as the Lions make a goal. The blocked kick and the first score rev up the crowd, and the bleachers rattle as feet stamp in time to "We Will Rock You." Emmett and I are stomping, clapping, and laughing when Maddie finds us. With her backpack slung over one shoulder, she gives us a wry smile. Having fun? Oblivious to her irony, Emmett practically vibrates with excitement.
Harry blocked a kick and then that guy scored!
He bounces in his seat, jabbing a finger toward the field. Maddie and I follow the trajectory of his pointing to see number 7, a tall, wiry boy with thick, dark hair who is already in pursuit of the ball again, frowning in concentration, the moment of triumph clearly already a memory. And then the guy on the row in front of us turns.
That's my brother,
he says with a grin for Emmett. But his gaze flicks to mine, and I quickly look away.
Really?
Emmett squeals.
He's good!
I glance at Maddie to have something to focus on besides the gorgeous guy in front of me. But I find her blinking, looking almost startled, her eyes glued to the figure on the field. Number 7.
He is good, she says, sounding breathless.
Oh, Jesus. I yank the bag of popcorn out of Emmett's grasp and thrust it in front of my sister's face. Want some popcorn? She turns to me with a confused frown.
It might be a while before dinner, I stammer.
Are you hungry? She takes the bag from me, answering absently.
Sure.
She looks back, searching. I know, for number 7. But in the frenzy of activity on the field, no one person is easy to spot.
Don't look for him. I'm not ready to have the curse talk with you just yet. Did you finish your homework?
I ask, my voice blaring. Maddie's face when she looks at me is one of keen irritation.
God, why are you shouting? Are you okay, Millie? No, not really. I want to tell her. Take your
Sample complete. Ready to continue?